Welcome. My name is Erin, and this is the Aha Moment. And I have my co-host with me. I'm not feeling it tonight, Irene.
I could tell you're like rubbing your eyes.
Oh, it's been a long day in the trees.
Balsam fir all over you.
Oh my goodness. I find it in pockets throughout my pockets and in my hair and Anyways, this is episode 21, and this is the Aha Moment. My name is Erin Backus, and of course, you heard my co-host, Irene. And to kick off December, as you can hear us talking about Christmas trees, we have our guest with us tonight, Colleen. Say hi, Colleen.
Hello.
Hi, Colleen. We're so glad you're here.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Both of you up in Maine, what's the temperature up there?
It's actually a mild 55. It was crazy warm today. It felt kind of like a hurricane, you know, like a tropical storm was going to be coming through any moment. Did you notice that too, Colleen?
I did. Very windy today. And then we've had patches of fog. So not December-like whatsoever.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I have to share with you all, actually, on my departure coming home this evening, I got out of my vehicle to open up a gate and my headlights were on of my car, and all these moths were flying, you know, like thousands of them all over my vehicle and in the headlights and everything. And I have yet to go identify what it is, which kind. It seems too small to be the winter moth. But geez, it could be those fall webworm moths or something like that. But they just kind of hatched in this one moment of warmth. And so actually, I think we're going to get zapped again tonight. So kill those moths.
Oh, my gosh. Well, have you ever been mothing? Mothing is really fun, actually.
No, it is. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Oh. Moth lighting, as they refer to. Yeah, yeah. A cool event that we do at the gardens, actually.
Maybe I'll come up for moth event one night.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody. But it's usually in July or June. It's usually in June.
Oh, cool. So we'll get right into it. So our listeners are like, what's going on here? But so tonight, like as we were saying, we have Colleen Griffin. And just a little bit of intro about her. After 25 years in the health care field, Colleen, what were you doing for 25 years in the healthcare?
I worked in dentistry for 25 years. So it was a huge leap from dentistry to horticultural therapy.
Yeah, and we will definitely learn about that later on. Mm-hmm. After 25 years, Colleen needed a change, and it was necessary. So she followed her heart and enrolled in horticulture classes at the local community college. From there, she found HT and attended HTI in Colorado. She acquired her HTR in 2018 and has been since worked with adults and children with special needs in vocational and developmental behavioral programs. For the past 4 years, she has been affiliated with the Dempsey Centers for Quality Cancer Care, serving not only those with cancer diagnosis, but their families and caregivers. Her work with the Dempsey Center is on mindfulness-based stress reduction. Mm-hmm. Colleen recently became involved with teaching the master classes through the University of Maine Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Volunteer Program. She serves on the AHTA work team for the conference planning committees and is in the collaboration network as well, representing the Northeast Horticultural Therapy Network. And she is currently the membership coordinator for NEHTN. And she organizes the quarterly newsletter for that network. I told you I can't speak tonight, Irene. Out of it, but we are so happy to have Colleen come on tonight. She is on our board. Both myself and Irene serve on the NEHTN board, so we get to see her in that capacity monthly, but it's really exciting to have her at here in this capacity as well.
Yes, and welcome. a fellow Mainer, living in is it South Portland? You live in South Portland, right?
I live in Portland. Yeah.
Oh, you live in Portland.
Which is a it's a different city than we're across the river from South Portland. So.
Right. It's like people living in Manhattan saying they live in Manhattan and not Long Island or Brooklyn. Right.
Something.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about what you are doing now as a horticultural therapist. It sounds like you're a contract horticultural therapist. Is that correct?
Yes, I operate as an independent contractor and just kind of closed up a couple of gardens. So right now I'm really focusing on the work, the conference work team and the collaboration, network collaborative effort that I'm involved in and planning for 2022
and you're referring for American Horticultural Therapy Association in that capacity.
Right. Yeah. 2022 American Horticultural Therapy Association Conference.
Yeah.
Which will be in Kansas City. Yes.
That's a mouthful.
Oh, yes. I'm so glad that they're gonna resume the effort to go back to Kansas City. I really am looking forward to that.
We can hope that it does happen. There's always that question, that COVID question mark that hangs over all of our heads. So
right,
it isn't written in stone at the moment.
That's fantastic. So, but you closed a few gardens down. Tell us a little bit about what that entails.
Well, in early this year, early 2021, I was approached by Dempsey Center, and they were in a kind of a strange situation. They have had a community garden for, oh my gosh, well before I came along. So probably 8 to 10 years, they've had a community garden that serves their clients of Dempsey mm-hmm. Center. And mm-hmm. they have a cooking program. They have a teaching kitchen, an instructional kitchen mm-hmm. on site. They do a lot of teaching nutritional programs with their clients. Mm-hmm. And they also have a CSA of sorts where anything that isn't used in the instructional kitchen is given out as a CSA of sorts to the clients.
So, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's really a wonderful program. I am very, very fortunate to be affiliated with Dempsey Center. Mm-hmm. And but their situation was that the piece of property that the community garden existed on, the landowner decided to develop the property and told Dempsey Center they're going to have to move on. And mm-hmm. so how do you move a community garden? You know, how do you, mm-hmm. what do you do? So we started in January figuring this out. And luckily it was just a great good fortune that we were offered a piece of, a great piece of property in Auburn, the same town that Dempsey Center is located in, on the other side of town, but it is the Outdoor Learning and Education Center that is owned by the Auburn YMCA. And the YMCA has just such a similar philosophy and mission statement as Dempsey Center of just improving quality of life for, you know, those they serve. So it's worked out very, very well. Right. And they asked me to design the garden. Became very bold and asked if I could add in a therapeutic section to the community garden. And I was just thrilled when they came back and they said, sure. And what do you need? What do you, you know, what does that look like? And right. so I sketched it out and we put it together and we started this past May. We had a very wet spring, if you remember, in Maine. And we started in May of building a garden from where there was nothing.
Right.
It's been
And so can you describe to some people or to our listeners what some of those key features are that distinguish a garden, a more traditional garden to what is a therapeutic garden?
Well,
what are some of the key features that you integrated?
The garden that this has always been a production garden, and it needed to remain a production garden. So we have a production side that has 14 raised beds and 4 to 6 in-ground beds. And that is where all the fruits, vegetables, herbs are grown. And then there's mm-hmm. another section that is very easily accessible. Accessibility was number one, that people had to be able, regardless of their mobility issues, they needed to be able to reach the therapeutic side. And so it is near the parking lot. It has 2 elevated beds, so you can easily stand and work in the elevated beds. Mm-hmm. And then there is a 14 foot long work table. And on one side of the work table, there are 2 wheelchair accessible beds, or we call them the trugs, where a wheelchair mm-hmm. can easily roll up, and it is at the right height for someone to work within those beds easily right. in a wheelchair.
And so are those beds also for edibles, or are they a mixture
yes.
of?
We did herbs in it this year. This was our inaugural year. And so there was a lot going on construction-wise. And we had limited opportunity to get people in into the therapeutic side, but we did do it. We know it works. And next year is we're going to hit the ground running and just start programming. I've already started thinking about what we're going to be doing next year. So that's very mm-hmm. exciting.
And so as a practitioner of horticultural therapy and then being commissioned to do this project, what was some of your learning curves in the process or learning opportunities that you realized, I'm expanding my awareness about these things?
I think my biggest challenge, which was a big surprise to me, was working with the master gardeners, and mm-hmm. they really did not want to give an inch on what the garden had been, which was completely production. They didn't, and I won't say they didn't want the therapeutic side. They didn't feel it was necessary. They didn't want to kind of be bothered with it, because they do have, and the master gardeners that are involved with the Dempsey Center, they are amazing. They've been there for years and years and years. And then all of a sudden this horticultural therapist comes along and things are changing really fast. So
right.
that was the biggest hurdle to get over, and just trying to collaborate and just to be aware of and cognitive of what mm-hmm. their concerns were, so that we could all work together. Mm-hmm. I have to say the season, it turned out great. I have a lot of respect for the men and women, the master gardeners and the community gardeners that come in week after week. And we all got along in the end, but in the mm-hmm. planning stage, there was a little, pushing.
Proprietary.
Exactly.
Yeah. Ownership. Yeah. And so, yeah, I was going to say, so you adapted to them. Did they end up adapting to you as well?
Very much so. I'm still That's really good. Pushing for the herbal tea garden. That was a complete utter no this year. And so uh-huh. I'm really pushing for that. And I made some good headway. It'll happen. It just has to happen in stages.
Right. I've been using the term, Rome wasn't built in a day, right? So you got to be very, very patient sometimes. So what were some of the plant introductions that you suggested that they hadn't ever really thought of having in their garden beds for your clients?
Well, the biggest thing that I did was I created a sensory garden, and the gardeners were on board with it only because they thought it will keep people out of the production side if they have this sensory garden over on the therapeutic side. So mm-hmm. I created a therapeutic garden with, that I focused on all 5 senses. So there were edible flowers, there were radishes, there were peas, there were all kinds of things that you could that were edible, that are scented, lavender. I mean, just all mm-hmm. of the things that you that come to mind. And mm-hmm. Lamb's ear for the soft touch. And right. It worked. In fact, one of my biggest, I won't call her a competitor, the one who kind of dug in her heels the strongest at the very end of the season, she would say, as she came up to me and said, you know, I always started my time at the garden, and she would come twice a week. I always started my time at the garden over at the sensory bed, and that prepared me, you know, like that transitioned me into getting in there and working with the plants. So that was mm-hmm. wonderful to hear, because that is that's why you want a sensory garden.
Right, right. Exactly. Yeah. It engaged the person to reduce their inhibitions and their barriers, yeah. breaking those down. Yeah. Yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah. And so in a day of working with clients at the Dempsey Center, you're working with patients who are in recovery of cancer treatment. Is that correct?
Some, yes. And typically they are the cancer patients themselves are people who have finished treatment, who are, you know, physically healthy. And we're always outside at the garden. We have yet to get back inside at all. And luckily for us, right at the garden, because we're on this outdoor education and learning center, they have a pavilion with about 6 full-size, picnic tables. Mm-hmm. And so we can go under the pavilion, we're still in the open air, and do heart therapy to get out of the sun, to get out of
right.
The main weather, which, as you know, is completely unpredictable. And right. It's been a really great asset for me to mm-hmm. have that space.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you customize the activities, not necessarily working in garden beds, but also bringing the plant material into these picnic table settings.
We do go in, we're able to go into the garden and collect the materials that we're going to be using and then bring uh-huh. them back. But one right. other thing that I neglected to say is that we don't only see the cancer patient, we also see family members and we see caregivers. And caregivers right. do make up a big part of my client base through Dempsey right. Center. And that is something I'm proud of, because there are people who definitely need a little stress relief, for sure.
So it's not necessarily that the caregivers are with their clients or their patients, but they themselves are having their own individual time with you as well.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. So yeah.
It's a nice,
that's really special.
Yeah. Because I've had whole families come in before mm-hmm. and work in the gardens and, you know, do a horticultural therapy session. I also do a lot of mindfulness in the garden and just mm-hmm. Introduce it as a tool for stress reduction. And I mm-hmm. found in my own life, that's very helpful. So, and there's no better place to be mindful and to enliven mm-hmm. all 5 senses than in a garden.
Right. Now, have you actually worked with any of the families who are in the process of grieving from a loss, you know, losing a loved one?
Yes, I work with a group of children who have lost someone in their life, either a sibling or a parent or a grandparent. And mm-hmm. those kids range in age. It's a little bit of a challenge because they range in age from, you know, like 18 years old down to 8. And mm-hmm. so that can be a little tricky, but a lot of times the teenagers become the helpers and, you know, help with the smaller kids. So it's all good. But it's definitely interesting, and just how these kids are processing everything mm-hmm. and what mm-hmm. they're dealing with, you know.
Mm-hmm. But what a gift that you're providing, and that the center is supporting you to provide for the youth, you know. And so speaking of youth, you know, when you were young, did you have a connection to horticulture in some capacity? And were there moments at which maybe you were cognizant of those, you know, experiences? And now reflecting as an adult, do you have anything that's now kind of compelling and identified as aha moments coming for you to cut to this point after being in the dentistry world for 25 years? You know, were there moments where you needed horticulture as a means of stress relief, as you mentioned?
Yes, most definitely, which led to my aha moment. But when I have two sons who are grown men now, but my youngest son at the age of 14 went over the handlebars of his bicycle going at a fast rate of speed and ended up with a rather severe brain injury. And that was my biggest challenge in my life thus far, was dealing with that. And he was, it was a long road. It was a really long road. He's doing very well now, luckily, but I found a lot happened during that time. And I found that going out and working in my garden was the stress relief that I needed, because it was my safe place. It was my place where I could work things out mentally, emotionally. It was really very helpful. But going through this process with him, I found that it was eye-opening, because the medical community, how do I want to say this? There's a huge gap between what the medical community calls recovery and wellness. And after it was a few years, I would say Marcus's recovery took probably 8 years. And I won't say, I don't think it's complete yet, to be honest with you. His life has changed incredibly. And even though he's doing remarkably well, it changed, that accident changed our lives, you know, the whole family. So when I really realized that, okay, the doctors are saying, oh, he's recovered and everything's going to be fine, it was far from fine. And I really found, the more I looked into hort therapy and the more that I put two and two together, like related my own life to what I was learning in hort therapy, I found that healing, number one, healing is not linear. It is a twisty, turny, windy road. And there is, I think, in order to heal, you have to be emotionally in the right place, and you have to be, you have to have a little bit of confidence. And where do you acquire that? Where do you get those things, especially if you've been through something traumatic and life-changing? And I found that where I found those things was in the garden. And that's where I thought, okay, this horticultural therapy, it is something that it's not the secret sauce. It's not magic. It's a tool. It's a tool that will get you from one stage to the next stage. And then you reassess and then you move on again. And that's when I found, it was through Marcus's journey of going from, you know, from the intensive care unit to, he's now he's in college and he's going for a forestry degree at the University of Maine. So I always call myself the luckiest girl in the world, because it could have turned out so much differently.
So the therapy, the therapeutic benefits were for you and for him. Give us some examples of what you did. Did you end up going into the garden with Marcus? Or doing plant activities with him along the way as you were doing it as well?
Not really, only because he was still, you know, a teenager and a boy, and hanging out with mom in the garden just isn't, that's not going to happen. But what I did,
he was still aware of his teenage hormones. And
yeah, that we call those years the dark years, because it was really rough. But what I did do is when I was a student in the horticulture program at Southern Maine Community College, I would come home and I would say, gosh, you should see what I learned today, you know, and this is what I learned. And I noticed that he would start to listen. And then, you know, along the way, I would interject, or I'd bring home, or I'd show him, you know, work that was being done on, you know, online or whatever. And I think it just kind of planted the seed of interest, because he had no interest in anything for a long time. And then one day things were getting much better. And he was in his very early 20s. He was probably 20, 21. He signed up for a arborist apprenticeship program, which just floored us. We couldn't believe that he
went. Wow.
And he became a licensed arborist in the state of Maine. So
awesome.
It was truly amazing. It was, that was, again, that was another piece of my aha moment. Like, there is something here. This is a tool. This works.
Yeah. And that's very powerful.
That's his happy place, being deep into the woods, which is why forestry is his, you know, what he wants to do with his life.
Nature accepts us in all forms, right? You know, it has no prejudices against us. So.
It's a non-judgmental place. And I think you feel so judged by everything, you know, everyone,
right,
that he could go out there and be himself and be accepted.
And that's one thing that you said about coming home after class and sharing with him about what you've learned. I think also, you know, reflecting on that a little bit, I also hear something maybe about how he saw you, his mom, as a person, as a human learning. And so it became like an equal experience. You know what I mean? He sees mom as not this, like, I know everything kind of, you know, attitude, but like you want to learn more. You want to be engaged more with other things too. And so it probably made you more of a human to him than a parent per se.
Right. Yeah, that's a nice thought, actually. I guess I hadn't looked at it that way, but yeah.
Now going back in your self-discovery too, I mean, you said you had a garden at your house. How did you get to that point that you wanted to have a garden? Where was your journey and also the idea of having a garden for yourself?
You mean as an adult or? I grew up down East Maine. So we were not affluent whatsoever. And you always, I mean, and it wasn't everyone in that area is, you know, you live paycheck to paycheck, families do. And everybody had a huge garden. So gardens were always, that's where the kids went to work, you know? Yep. So in the beginning, it was like, what, you know, I don't want this garden and stuff. Even though my mother would have like a few flower gardens, really the focus was on, you know, getting the fruits and vegetables out of the garden. And then once you got it out of the garden, there was canning and freezing and, you know, jam making, and it was work. It was a lot of work. So as a kid, I don't think I was ever really drawn to it. but my grandfather, everybody has a, you know, that one person in their life that kind of opened the door. And he was an amazing gardener and, loved it. I mean, and I could see his real passion for it. And that came back later in life, I think. And then when my kids were little, we always had a garden, but it was more, it wasn't, you know, an acre large, you know, it was a small little kitchen garden. It was much more manageable. So they had a different gardening experience than I did.
Right. But something a little maybe more manageable as well for you at the time.
Absolutely.
And so when you were just kind of going through it, so you moved to the area of South Portland, you have a family, you were just, where was the transition from dentistry into going into horticulture and then also then your entry into horticultural therapy. Give us a few building blocks and transition points.
Yeah, it's all related to Marcus's injury and his journey through recovery and getting well. I realized after, you know, I'd been doing dentistry for 25 years and thought, this is a lot of stress. I've got stress at work. I've got stress at home. I need a break. I need to get out. Something has to change. And mm-hmm. I was at a breaking point. And luckily for me, we were financially able for me to step away. And I started taking horticulture classes because I thought that's my happy place. That's where I feel good. That's where I'm well when I'm in that garden space. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Then that led to what am I going to do with a hort degree? You know, what mm-hmm. do I do with this? And I'd always been, my whole career, I had always had the role of caretaker, of care provider. And so it was mm-hmm. a natural step into hort therapy. And the more I learned about hort therapy and what it can do and its ability to reduce that stress and to just create that environment of acceptance and feeling of you're safe here, you're accepted, you're, you know, it's a tool. I keep going back to mm-hmm. that, just that tool. Yep. That you start using in other aspects of your life. And that was very mm-hmm. powerful for me. And the more I learned, the more I was convinced that this was definitely what I should be doing.
So we've had a few of our, you know, guests tell us a little bit about how they heard about horticultural therapy, you know, or they kind of did a blind search about, is there something that exists about, you know, called horticultural therapy? What got you cued into the fact that there is a practice called horticultural therapy? Did you do something similar where you just Googled it in, or did you hear it from somebody, et cetera?
I think that I probably did do a Google search early on. But I also remember sitting down and talking with my advisor in my, you know who I'm Cheryl, you yep. know who I'm talking yep. about. And she was, you know, she says, what you're describing is hort therapy. You need to look into this. And they were both of the instructors at SMCC, where I went to the community college. They were incredibly supportive of getting me to take that next step. And
right. I think that's when you started volunteering at CMBG too, to kind of see if there's something to this that you liked about it, right? Is that what happened as well?
Well, I did that, yes. And I did that with, that was a internship for the horticulture program.
Right, your independent study project.
Right, internship. Exactly. Right. So, right. And yeah, I did go up, and that's right. I spent that summer up at the gardens with you doing the, or checking out what is hort therapy, how is it a profession, or how do you make it into a profession?
Right. And then you went to another program of that practiced horticultural therapy. Can you just tell us who that was or what program that was again?
For my internship, do you mean?
Or yeah, for your horticultural therapy internship, yeah.
So I was, again, the stars aligned for me. I did not know, at that time, there was only one person in the whole state of Maine who could be a internship supervisor, and that mm-hmm. was Kathy Perry. And mm-hmm. she lives in Southern Maine, but works in New Hampshire, just across the border in New Hampshire. And I learned of her, again, through my advisor at the community college. And I wrote to Kathy, and basically I thought, my gosh, if she won't accept me into becoming her, accept me as her intern, I'm going to be going to Boston. Mm-hmm. And I was really trying to figure out how that was going to happen. And mm-hmm. lucky for me, Kathy accepted me as her intern, and I think the world of her. She just was such a wonderful supervisor and teacher. And I spent a summer at the Monarch School of New England, where they really have, it's a school for pretty severely disabled kids, you know, medically, emotionally, physically, and behavioral disabilities. And so mm-hmm. I learned so much over that summer. And more mm-hmm. than once I said, you know, what am I doing? You know, this is, you know, what have I gotten myself into? And mm-hmm. then the more you relax and things fall into place, I realized that this was a great place. And Kathy and I remain close to this day, and I consider her a very good friend. She's a sweet. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she is awesome. Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that you have so many gifts to give those individuals too is very important to. Yep. You know, we also think about when we do our programming for our populations, you know, there are certain things that we like to think about as far as like what seems to really captivate our clients, or what tools, like you said, or plants. And so we have this very important question that we think is relevant for all horticultural therapists to consider. And that is for Erin to present the question to you. So I will throw the reins over to Erin. Hey, I was trying. I thought that was a better one than from the past.
I know. I got to get better at just like reading you and then just going for it instead of being introduced, I guess. We're getting better. No worries. But Colleen, what is your go-to plant for your sessions?
Well, I have a couple, but the one that there's one that I find I use probably more than any other garden plant. I guess there would be two. They'd be like house plant type, and then there'd be garden plant. My garden plant is definitely nasturtium. I think, you know, it's got the color going on. It's got that spicy scent to it. Everything is edible. And I even this year I made nasturtium vinegar, and I'm making a nasturtium vinaigrette with it. So it's it's an incredibly multi-purpose plant. And then I think for like a house plant or a greenhouse plant would probably be, and I'm sure 100 people have said this, but our scented geraniums. Because they're so versatile, they're easy to grow. Boy, you can get them in just about any scent out there. And I just think people, I should say one other thing. When I was working with I've got more than one, obviously. But the mimosa, so it is the sensitive plant.
Yeah.
So I was working with my behavioral disabled kids. They were so drawn to it because it reacts to your touch, and they mm-hmm. it just blew them away. And I still have, unfortunately, that program is no longer COVID. It was a victim of COVID. And but I went back and grabbed my my mimosa plant and brought it home. So it lives with
That's
me.
Good. That's awesome. Is it a small tree now?
No, because I keep it. I don't have it. If I were in a greenhouse, absolutely. But because it's kind of struggling. I even this year went out and bought it its own humidifier, hoping it would get through the winter. So we will see. I'm becoming that kind of a plant lady, I guess.
The VIP experience for plants. those are great. And then I say you're about the fifth person who has mentioned scented geranium out of the 21 interviews. And the other thing about nasturtium that I love too is the size of the seed and just the design of it, you know, what it kind of looks like. It looks like a helmet or, you know, brains or whatever as we talk about it. But it has such a very unique structure to the seed, yeah, for sure.
And it's easy to grow. And you can make a regular tossed green salad, throw a bunch of nasturtiums on the top, and people think you're a gourmet. I mean, they're just wow.
It's true.
It's wow factor for your food.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, thank you so much, Colleen. It's been really remarkable to hear your story. And
yes,
and I think a lot of people will relate to some of the things that you have said this evening. And I hope you felt like it was a good opportunity for you to share with the public.
Yeah, well, thank you. It's my very first podcast. So,
yay!
And now if people want to reach out to you for suggestions or not suggestions, but questions about what you do, or maybe some tips that you may have, do you have an email which you could share with the listeners?
I do. Could I use the if you go to NEHTN, I'm on there. Is that
okay
to do, or is that?
Yep. That's okay. Fine. So Northeast Horticultural Therapy Network's website, Colleen is going to be referenced on the website board link.
Yeah. And I'm also, you can find me through the membership coordinator. If you go to membership, my name pops up.
Okay.
Great.
Great. And by the way, we all want to have more members.
Yes, we do. Contact me.
All right. Well, thanks again.
Yes. Thank you so much. And listeners, thank you so much for listening, and have a happy holiday and a happy new year. We will
see
you in 2022.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye. Cheers.